Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3. Chapter is entitled Liberation from the Illusory Energy. And today we're covering texts 7 and 8. Ittam karma katir gacchan. Bhava bhajra vaha puman. Abhuta samblavat sarga. Palaya adashkunte vasa. Itam karma gatir gacchan. Bhava bhajra vaha puman. Abhuta samblavat sarga. Palaya vashkute vasaha. Please chant.
Itam karma gati gacchan.
Itam karma gati
gacchan.
Vaishnavis. Vaishnavis. Itam, in this way, karma gati, the destination is determined by his past activities. Gacchan, obtaining. Bahu abhadra, much that is inauspicious. Vaha, which involve. Puman, the living being. Abhuta samblavat. Until the dissolution of the created universe. Sagra palayo. Birth and death. Asnute. He experiences. Avasaha. Hopelessly. Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Guru, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the conditioned living entity is forced to experience repeated birth and death, impelled by the reactions of his own activities. He helplessly wanders from one inauspicious situation to another, suffering from the moment of creation into the time of cosmic annihilation. Purport. According to Srila Madhvacharya, after hearing that the living entity is repeatedly subjected to birth and death within the material world, if one still considers such a helpless entity equal to God in all respects, one will surely fall into the darkest regions of the universe, from which it is difficult to rise. I remember 44 years ago, I was walking down a street in New York City, and there was a billboard that invited you to meet a 16-year-old perfect master. And I actually had some friends that were his followers. I won't mention any names. They used to have this little, it was kind of like a tea made out of wood, you know, and they put their head on it and they covered their head with a blanket. And it had millions of followers. And, you know, he advertised himself, had good promotional shakti, advertised himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway. I won't go on and on about it, but it just kind of struck me, you know, this commentary of Srila Madhvacharya. And of course, that's an extreme presentation, but it's not an uncommon thought process, you know, within the New Age set. And there's the whole Mayavad platform is based upon that. Okay, let's go on to the next verse. We'll chant in unison. Datu paplava astane vaktam brahmanatam anadi nidanam kalo navadam sthiti. When the annihilation of the material elements is imminent, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form of eternal time withdraws the manifest cosmos, consisting of gross and subtle features, and the entire universe vanishes into non-manifestation. Report. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev teaches that the material nature originally exists in an inert state of equilibrium called Pradhan. When Lord Vishnu casts his potent glance in the form of Kala, or time, material interactions take place, culminating in the variegated creation of the material cosmos. In this verse, it is stated that at the end of universal time, the same Kala that originally incited the female nature into manifestation again withdraws the cosmos into its original state of inert non-manifestation. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the time potency itself, Kala, is then withdrawn and it merges into the Supreme Soul, who manifests himself as the original cause of material nature, and Adir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karna. Such technical arrangements for creation and annihilation, birth and death, do not exist in the eternal spiritual kingdom of God. In the spiritual sky, the variegated spiritual enjoyment of the Lord and his devotees is not hampered by the inferior cycles of birth, maintenance, and destruction found in the material world. Om Gana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umutam Dini Tochmai Shi Gurave Namaha. I just want to backtrack a little bit here. I just go back to the previous verse, the translation. Impelled by deep-rooted material desires, the embodied living entity engages his active senses in fruitive activities. He then experiences the result of his material actions by wandering throughout this world in so-called happiness and distress. And then, first translation, thus the conditioned living entity is forced to experience repeated birth and death Impelled by the reactions of his own activities, he helplessly wanders from one inauspicious situation to another, suffering from the moment of creation until the time of cosmic annihilation. I'm just wondering if if everyone kind of buys into that statement, just kind of look internally. Are we being overly pessimistic about what's that? Seems extreme. So there's absolutely zero happiness in this material world. This is what's being inferred here. I mean, it's so-called happiness in the previous translation. In this translation, it's zero. I mean, does everyone buy into this? No? Okay. Come on, this is Shastra. Okay, no, wait. Prabhupada said many, many things, but is this something that we can buy into? I mean, it's important, you know. Here we've got Antariksha, you know, he's Navayogendra, you know, completely liberated soul, empowered to give knowledge of the absolute truth.
There is a statement in the Bhagavatam, I can't pinpoint, where it says, the Krishna says, my opinion is that that when there's a thing and there's a cause of the thing, that the cause is non-different from the original, from the result. In other words, result and the cause are synonymous. And so, since it's clear, right from the Bhagavad Gita and from everywhere, that enjoyment in this world results in suffering. Material enjoyment results in suffering. And so even the so-called material enjoyment can be thought to be suffering because at the time, you'll be suffering a lot. So in that sense, everything in the material world is suffering. You have suffering itself and the cause.
Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evatam. So the stress that comes about when the jiva, you know, his senses contact, the sense object, is actually the source of distress. Okay.
And when seen in a total perspective, that the petty little sense gratification you get compared to actual enjoyment, which is prema bhakti, is so vast that enjoyment itself can be seen as suffering. That's another idea.
I was asked on an emergency basis to give this class, so you guys are all giving it, you know, for me, and I don't have to say anything. Yeah, okay, back to Charles.
There's one quick thing I'd like to say. I mean, joy, happiness, and distress, subjective. I mean, this is how you respond to these issues. I mean, the world just is. I mean, it's up to you how you respond to it. So, I mean, that's why this sort of, I find it very confusing. I mean, we're looking for something in the future that's better than here or something like this. Well, but maybe it's here. We better, you know, what is your response to it?
One of the symptoms of material happiness is that you're always thinking it's going to come, kind of, you know. I mean, there's optimism, you know, that it will be there sometime. But, you know, there's a lot of old men and old women in this world, and they kind of look back at their life and say, God, you know, there was this hope, but what the heck happened? You know, I just kind of feel let down by the whole, you know, this, you know, the whole episode, you know, of material life. Hare Parayana Prabhu.
So this verse applies to the non-devotees who are enduring reactions of karma, but for devotees, the material world is auspicious, bhadram. Not abhadram. Because of the fact that in the material world, we see Krishna, we experience Krishna, and even while the devotees are in the material world, they are actually in the spiritual world. So for the devotees, even the material world is auspicious.
That was the lesson?
So for the devotees, even the material world is auspicious.
Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe I should start giving a class now. You know? This could keep going, you know. Let's see, there's a really nice quote where did I put it now? Here it is. This is in the beginning of Kardama Muni's instruction to on creation to Devahuti. This is in the purport to the first text of chapter 26. As, what did I say? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Senior moment. Sorry about that. As long as one, this is Prabhupada, as long as one has even a slight desire to enjoy or lord it over material nature, there's no chance of his being freed from the influence of nature's material modes. And that's kind of goes along with what we're talking about here, you know. So it seems like, well, this is like, is that something that's actually achievable, you know, for the little me? Pretty tall order. I mean, we had a show of hands of those that feel that there's some happiness in this material world. Now we got many getting confused because for devotees there's an awful lot of happiness, an awful lot of bliss. So I guess on the material platform, we're qualifying that. So, I mean, think about it. You don't have to show your hands, but it's something we have to introspect on, right? That's actually a big part of the process of anartha nivritti. Okay. So, there's a quote from the Parma. Oh, yes, Maharaj. Okay, give Maharaj the microphone.
I don't want to extend the thing, but I just wanted to get my opportunity to weigh in on the issue, and I would, so to speak, vote that there really is no happiness by just giving a little analogy. Is that when it's like in Bhagavad Gita, happiness in the mode of passion, based on the senses you mentioned, 522, yahisma. So it's just like the idea of bait. Like if the fish enjoys the worm, something, or anything that's a temptation, and we're enjoying it, in perspective, you can understand that what may have appeared momentarily to be very blissful, happy, is actually just built, it was just connected, it's completely part of the system of suffering. Just think of the, you know, what kind of happiness is that, that the fish enjoys the worm when it's actually getting the hook. So I just wanted to suggest an analogy, not to depress everybody, just suggest that.
Okay, Madame O'Hara, I can't. I get in big trouble if I don't call on you.
It's just a short.
You've been mad at me for weeks.
We've used the analogy of the water and mirage. So in the mode of passion, it looks like happiness. It looks like the mirage. And then in the beginning, it seems like happiness, the mode of passion. But then it turns into poison. And I just had one little part of a purport, just one sentence in a purport that I thought was really.
Okay. You have our blessings. Go ahead.
Thank you. It is stated previously, in any hellish condition, the conditioned soul thinks he's happy. Otherwise, it would not be possible for him to suffer hellish life. He thinks he's happy. Otherwise, he wouldn't be possible for him to suffer that much. And then, you know, practical examples like a city like New York, you know, they brought, it's such a horrible lifestyle, but they think they're happy. They wouldn't give it up for anything.
I'm always amazed when people are taking drags on their cigarettes, you know, and this is supposed to be happy. It's a, oh God, you know, they're killing themselves. Anyway. Okay. Okay, am I ever going to give this class? Everyone wants to throw their two cents in. I really opened Pandora's box. Okay, Pram Govinda, last one now. Okay.
the Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada put this Madhvacharya's opinion in this Madhvacharya. Jiva Sukhanyasi. Pleasure seeking by nature is the constitutional position of Jiva. As a servant of Krishna, it's true, and the eternal nature is pure love, eternal function is service to God. But he is always pleasure seeking by nature. Whether he is in hell or heaven or spiritual world doesn't matter, he will be always looking for pleasure. And Krishna, through Maya, material nature, provides this happiness by covering his intelligent constitutional position. Then he can think, I am this pig. As a human being, the stool was not disgusting, but as a pig, it is tasteful. So it is nothing wrong in a sense that pleasure seeking by nature, Maya is providing. But in this verse, what I understand, that Rupa Goswami Pad says in Nectar Devotion, Brahmananda bhavet esa cheta praradha gunikita naitam bhakti sukham bodhe paramanna tullamati. Srila Prabhupada translated that if you multiply the highest happiness of this material called Brahmas as a prajapati, that they create the opposite sex and after enjoy they can destroy. So much happiness, ultimate enjoyment of sense gratification. If you compare that to 1,000 trillion times, according to Prabhupada's translation in 7th canto, cannot be a trace of happiness that constitutionally jivas are entitled. So from that angle, this is miserable.
That's the final Siddhanta. In this.
Yeah.
Okay. So, here's an interesting point, you know, that Jiva Goswami makes in the Paramatma Sandarbha. He says that when the Jiva comes under the influence of the illusory energy, he starts thinking like this: I will not act for your benefit, I will act only for my benefit. This is the illusion. And then hell breaks loose. You know, it is like, I mean, from the time of the creation of the material cosmos to the dissolution, you know, and then again, and again, keep going, you know, Nitya Buddha. So, whoo-wee. How to overcome all this? One of my favorite verses is Lord Vishabdev to his 100 sons. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yadindriya pitya apanoti. Sarumanya yata apanoyam asanapi kveshita asadeha. When the living entity considers sense gratification the aim of life, he simply becomes mad after materialistic living and he engages in all kinds of sinful activities. And he thinks, you know, that that's his whole purpose in life. He doesn't understand that he's got this material body, it's been awarded to him so he can engage in sense gratification, but actually that material body is the source of all of his misery. So therefore Lord Rishabdev, he advises his sons, you know, whatever you do, don't go there. You know, just don't engage in sense gratification. Be intelligent, you know, and take the path of devotional service. So that's our option. You know, it's not like, you know, this is the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul always has free will. We've got free will. We've got choices that we can make. You know, okay, there's a certain amount of karmic trajectory. You know, Krishna, as we practice sadhana bhakti, you know, he relieves us of that karmic trajectory, but he uses, kind of takes charge of our sinful reactions and uses it to help reform us. So we still go through, you know, our trials and tribulations that, you know, seem to correlate with, you know, astrological predictions, so to speak. So, am I under the laws of karma or aren't I? No. If we're actually clearly trying to practice Krishna consciousness, we're not under the laws of karma. We've got trajectory, you know, in this body, this parabdha karma. You know, we've got different things that we've got to go through, lessons to learn, you know, Sudevi can take deeper and deeper shelter in Krishna. So, you know, this is actually a pastime of the Lord to make, you know, to create the material universe. He does it, and it seems almost, you know, if we read, if we're not so well informed, we might look at this. I think Dravida, who made this point in his last class, is, my God, you know, this seems really hellish. How could, you know, how could a loving God create such a mess for his parts and parcels to sojourn in lifetime after lifetime, you know, nonstop suffering from the creation of the material universe to its dissolution. Lifetime after lifetime, nothing but suffering. Doesn't seem right. But actually, it is love. You know, this is actually a pastime of the Lord to allow the jiva to exercise his free will, because you can't force love. Ram Govinda, from now on, you have to love me. Okay? You know, I mean, I can't force you to love me. You know, if you don't love me, you're going to get it. So, you know, I mean, it's, this is, a, you know, there's a whole unfolding, you know, kind of an uncovering of the free will and the opportunity to choose properly. You know, this is what the whole process that Srila Prabhupada's given to us entails. And, you know, in the 25th chapter, the third canto describes how, because this is this false ego, basically, you know, that I will not act for your benefit, I will only act for my benefit. That's ahankara, right? I mean, this is what it is. And he's, you know, actually just so contradictory, because he's actually doing just exactly the opposite. I'm not acting for my benefit, and I'm not acting for your benefit. You know, I'm just destroying myself. I'm putting myself in situation after situation of hellish conditions. So there is a process that Prabhupada's very kindly given us, how to get out. Okay, so in this leela, you know, when a devotee, we've been hearing, you know, in the last chapter, you know, how the Uttama Vaishnava, Uttama Bhagavat, you know, he actually sees Krishna everywhere. You know, there's energy, you know, and this is Krishna. And it's not, you know, Vishvam, Purna, what is it? Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, you know, he actually sees that, and he's in bliss all the time because he's really connected. So how do we get there? How do we get out of this, like, ensnared condition? I mean, I was just recently listening to, my son put on, there's a psychiatrist who somehow or other discovered that there were past lives in some of his patients, and then he got involved with hypnosis and past life regression. He was a very famous person named Brian Wise, a very wise man, and he wrote a book called Many Life and Many Masters. And but we know about this. The point is that, you know, we can also see, you know, how things are being arranged by the Lord. We can see, you know, how we started our lives, and, you know, there's a thread, you know, of connectivity between all of the experiences that we have, and Krishna's helping us. So I think that, you know, rather than just having this sound like some mental speculative process, there's, you know, that I'm engaging in here, you know, by just speaking off the top of my head. There's, you know, starting with, in the second chapter, it's actually text, the first canto, text 16, you know, right straight through to 21, you know, it describes, you know, how we actually, you know, we cut the knots, how the false ego is dissipated. You know, how this whole illusion is ended, so that we can actually experience this natural position of unlimited happiness. You know, there's three stages of happiness that are unfolded, that Rupa Goswami unfolds in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And you know, the topmost stage. You know, when someone is in prema, he can't even conceive of sense gratification. He's experiencing so much transcendental bliss. He can't even conceive of the existence of sense gratification. It just wouldn't even enter his mind. You know, in the bhava platform, you know, it's like, it's you know, vastly superior to liberation. I mean, how many times? He was saying something like trillions of times. So, huh? Only 1,000 trillion times, okay. So, I mean, but there's avenues that we've got open to us. We just got to take them. We've got to opt out, you know, of this craziness, you know, that I'm here only for my benefit. Meh. You know, I don't care about you. Meh. You know, I mean, it's like this kind of mentality that's got us in all this trouble, right? But we can get out of it. So, Sutta Goswami, you know, is it Sonakarisi? No, Sonakarisi. Yeah. Shushushro Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Shamahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatita Nishivana. You know, by rendering service to the pure devotee, you know, then one develops an eagerness to hear, you know, the glories of the Lord, hear Bhagavatam. So then we go Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidyanta Stolya Bhadrani Vidu Noti Sri Chitam. So Sri Krishna, who is a super soul in everyone's heart, he cleanses desire for material enjoyment. And that's what causes all our trouble, that desire for material enjoyment. From the heart of the devotee who's developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves what? Virtuous, okay. Alright, then we got the famous Nashta Prayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtiti. So then, you know, have we got it up there yet? Basically? That's 218, right? Yeah. So many devotees recite that before they start giving the Bhagavatam class. And so what does that do? You know, by regularly attending Bhagavatam classes, glad to see you all here today, and rendering service to the book Bhagavat, the pure devotee, then almost everything in the auspicious in the heart, eliminated. And then one becomes established in irrevocable devotional service. Right? And then the next one, then we start getting some pretty big glimpses of happiness. Tadarajas tamo bhavas tamo tadarajas. Come on, roll it up. Lost my memory. Cheta itai anavidham stitam satve prasiditi. So as soon as irrevocable devotional service is established in the heart, the effects of the modes of passion and ignorance are dissipated. And then one becomes established and goodness becomes completely happy. But that's just the beginning. You get a lot happier, you know, once you get to the Sutta-Sattva platform, because then you can very, very intimately interact with the Lord. So then we've got, let's see, this is outside of my gross memorization realm. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangha sujayata. Thus established in a mode of unalloyed goodness, a man whose mind has been enlivened by contact and devotional service of the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. And then the last one in the sequence, vidite vidaya grantish chindyante sarva samsaya shidyante chasya karmani drista evat manishvara. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. So that knot in the heart, that's the false ego, finish. And it's just complete bliss. We're so happy. And that's what we can get. We just have to opt out of the nightmare we've been in for how many lifetimes? And you know, take Prabhupada's mercy. He said, and this is one of my favorite quotes. This is from, I think I've probably mentioned this in about at least 20 Bhagavatam classes since I've been here. But it's a real meaningful exchange that took place in the early days of the Juhu project. And actually, Giriraj Swami is writing a book on it right now, you know, and it's, he told me it's going to be published, he'll finish it in 2018. But when things were really tough there, Srila Prabhupada called on his right-hand man to come in and like work things out, and that was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You know, in really tough situations, that's who he relied upon. So one day, you know, here we had Mr. Nair and all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So one day, Tamal Krishna Maharaj exclaimed to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, how can I think of Krishna? My mind is simply filled with temple finances." And then Prabhupada responded, "Yes, we've wasted many lifetimes on ourselves. If just in this one lifetime, we can give heart and soul to pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement, then at the end, even if we're not completely perfect, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take us back to Godhead." So that's a promise of a Mahabhagavat. And we know that Krishna honors these promises. We saw this with the case of Bhishma Dev. You know, when he promised, when he made a vow that he would either get Krishna to break his vow not to fight, or he would do Arjuna in. And so when it looked really, you know, like maybe he was going to do Arjuna in, what did Krishna do? He leaped off the chariot and grabbed the chariot wheel and went after him. And so even more important than his own vow was the vow of his devotees. So don't think that that won't happen to you and me, you know, if we actually dedicate our lives, heart and soul, to pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement. I saw this happen with my friend Nirguna Prabhu when he left his body in the first Mayapur Institute classroom in Mayapur. He was a very dedicated preacher and a distributor, and it was amazing how he left his body. It was just incredibly ecstatic and uplifting. And it helped devotees a lot have tremendous faith in the process of devotional service and also Prabhupada's promise. And I had a discussion just a few days after Nirguna Prabhu left with Giriraj Swami. He came, there was a big yatra, a Chopadi Yatra in Mayapur, about 4,000 devotees, and Maharaj gave the first class, and it was a long class. He went up for like about an hour and a half, and afterwards, I went up to him and started to tell him about this, you know, Nirguna Prabhu's departure, and we spoke for another 45 minutes, you know, and then, anyway, it kind of unfolded into a whole thing where I went to meet one of his disciples, in Vrindavan, you know, this is that service. And I just happened to, you know, where I was supposed to meet him was the opening of the hospice in Vrindavan. And Giriraj Swami used his inheritance, a lot of it, you know, to fund this. It was quite a developed project, you know, and there's many devotees are leaving their bodies there, and many local Brijabasis also. I think mostly locals, but it's a really good facility. And so when I came into the room, he turned around and he just grinned at me, you know, like, and really, I just felt so blissful. And then he actually came over and asked me if I could talk about Nirguna Prabhu's departure. And so I did. And that was what I saw, you know, took place, is that Lord Chaitanya came. And, you know, even though he was not completely perfect, at the end he was completely perfect, but before the end he wasn't, you know, but it was a very rapid ascension to a high level of Krishna consciousness, you know, and this was the Lord's mercy and Prabhupada's promise. And then Giriraj Swami said, it's not just Nirguna Prabhu that this happens to. He said that this has been observed with many devotees that have left their body and they've been surrounded by senior devotees, and they've, you know, the senior devotees have observed very advanced symptoms of Krishna consciousness, or symptoms of advanced Krishna consciousness in these devotees, because that's what happens. You know, I mean, according to, you know, kind of a standard understanding that we get from Shastra, it's like a few lifetimes. Prabhupada's given it one time around, you know, that's it. All we got to do is give light, you know, heart and soul to push in on his movement. All right, so we'll stop here, and Maharaj is going to smash me for being so bogus.
Everything you said is completely perfect and inspiring. But there's always the tweaking function, the balancing. Is that in, where was it, in Puerto Rico, Gurabo? I asked your Guru Maharaj, your Diksha Guru Maharaj, yes, that's Rup Maharaj, about this process. I say, if, you know, if we're not so perfect, if we're not so fixed up, can we just kind of almost assume that when we're getting very close to death and we're actually leaving the body, that somehow we'll get this inspiration to rise to the occasion? And his response to that was very kind of sobering, in the sense that he said, well, don't count on that. In other words, of course, we see it happens, especially with very sincere devotees, as you were mentioning. But at the same time, we shouldn't be complacent and think that I'm going like this. I have to be up there, and I'm going like this, and maybe, and then when I get like 3 days before I'm dying at all, then it's just automatically it's going to happen, and Lord Chaitanya's going to come, and I'm just going to go, you know, way up. So it's better we take advantage of the fact that we still have some degree of health and try to really accelerate.
I think that also, you know, with Prabhupada's, you know, the way he expressed it, if we give heart and soul pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement, that is an indication of sincerely trying, you know, that will kind of fit within the parameters of that expression. One has to be pretty sincere to give heart and soul. And so, but, you know, even with that, you know, the kind of the so there should be a serious effort at Anartha Nivritti, a serious effort to advance. And then that's heart and soul, as far as I can understand. When that's there, then, you know, one may not be on the Bhava platform, you know, 2 weeks before, but Naguna definitely was. You know, I mean, it's like, I've actually, the whole story takes about 2 hours to unpack, and it's just mind-blowing. It's just filled with... Yeah. It's in Death and Dying from a Vedic Perspective. It's Giri Raswami's book. And he had sent me a transcription of the talk that I gave it to open. And then he had me edit it. And I consulted with other devotees. Like Hari Sari was intimately involved. He was reading for an hour or two every day from his unpublished diary. Chivakram Prabhu. Okay. Nice and close to the mic, because I'm a deaf old man.
Yeah. So that part where it states that the living entity would stay in this material world actually perpetually, when he transmigrates from species to species, comes to the human form, he misuses the human form and then falls down back to the species. And also sometimes he goes to the heavenly planets and the hellish planet, and then come back on earth and go to species. Then, so in that sense, he is here from the beginning of creation to the end of creation.
Okay, yeah.
From the start of creation, he's going through his sojourn, and then the end of creation, and then he starts again on another creation, like that perpetually. So we can look at time in a relative way, because we are very infinitesimal. It seems like a long time, but from the beginning of Brahma's day to the end is like a breath of Lord Vishnu. Right? And then for Brahma's lifetime, it's like that's when the Lord wakes up. You know, when he's sleeping, he wakes up after him. So, in one sense, it's like nothing for the Lord, but for the infinitesimal living entity, it's like such a vast and long time. But it shows the importance of utilizing the human form in a proper way, positively. You see, as soon as one misuses the human form, then he falls back into the other species, and then he goes back and revolving all the time.
That was the first question of King Nimi. What's the Shreyas? What's the highest good? You know, and then Kavi Yogendra, he spoke in Bhagavad Dharma. Dravidu is next.
You said at one point, and I'm sure that, you know, that the conditioned soul always has free will. But that's the whole point. We don't always have free will because we have some free will in the human form of life. Mm-hmm. But there's so many statements in the Bhagavatam, you know, the yoga. How many birds you've taken in animals the fact that I don't know well.
Yeah, you're right.
Completely. So therefore, as Prabhu was saying, the urgency of acting now that we have the human form of life, don't waste a second. You know, strive for the ultimate good. Because it's a very rare gift. You know, I probably make my point a million times and then we could get it right. So there's both sides here. One is that yes, you know, there's so much mercy to be gotten at the end, you know, from a devotee who's striving. But still, each of us should think, oh, you know, I'm so impure, I have to really work at it and cut off an arches until before the end comes. So we both like.
So when you say that actually they had a human form, you cannot say there's no
free. Because free will is another function of cheap potency. No, but the understanding, you have a free will to say that. Yeah. Correct. You don't have an access. In human form, it's like because they say, yeah, it is there, but it's not visible. That's why it says that aburito, sankochita, mukulita, vikoshita, puno vikoshita. The trees and the other, they also covered. They have a free will, but it's completely covered. It's not, they can't do anything if it's too hot or too cold.
It's temporarily gone. I have the potential, yeah. I have the potential for free will.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have some free will. I can walk this way, that way, this way. You know, there's always a little,
yeah.
But in common parlance, you lose your free will when you're totally covered. Now, we, yeah, as human beings, we have some free will. You know, just when someone gets gradations, this is the whole point of the sadhana. If you practice four regular principles, you don't get addicted to some drug. If you're really addicted to some drug, you lose a good part of your free will. You know, you gotta have it. Forget about, you know, I don't have, I'm not free. I'm bound up. I'm in chains. Got a monkey on my back. So the free will that we have, we should expand by serving Krishna, and then you get free of so many other distractions. Anyway, that's the way I see it. But you're right.
But Madame Mohan was using a grade school trip, you know, holding his arm really high, so I had to call on her. Okay.
This is short. It's just one sentence. It's from Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12, which has Janmamrita Jar of Vyadi in it. And it says, unless we have a pessimistic view of material life, considering the distress of birth, death, disease, and old age, there's no impetus for making advancement in spiritual life. So it's an item of knowledge to have this.
Well, that's what the whole class is about. I should have had that quote. Okay, Guru Maharaj and Guru Prasad.
Yeah, I was just as good. So I wanted to contribute a wrap-up reference, you know, that gets back into the, I won't say the guts, but I would say it, but the fabric and the essential aspect that we're hearing in the verses, today's verse. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th chapter, in the second verse, it says, Sargo pino pajaya te pralaye na vyapanticha. That it says, those who take shelter of this knowledge, this supreme knowledge about, at least in the jnana context of going beyond the modes of material nature, thus established, one is not born at the time of creation nor disturbed at the time of dissolution. So it shows the relationship between transcendence and not having to fret or cope about even the whole cosmic cycle.
That's a good wrap-up, Nurse. Thank you. And just one last one. I don't want to get everyone mad at me for going too long. Okay. Too late? Well, that one, yeah, well, Krishna still loves me.
You know, when my sister passed away, I was asked to say something, and I made a reference that there's no happiness in this material world. And after the speech, many people came over to me and said, at least four or five, and said, what do you mean there's no happiness? And then I was reflecting on it, you know, why so many people were disturbed, and I myself was not convinced. And then I heard a tape, we were listening to a tape of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was saying that when you come to this material world, he said there are three things. He said sex life, meat eating, and intoxication. He said as long as you're in this material world, those are the primary things you think of. And when you begin to realize that you're not this body, it's like when you're clean, you don't want to go into a dirty place. And then you're thinking how to get out from there. And when you start thinking how to get out, that's when we start saying, who is God? And we don't think that there's any happiness in the pure world. And I wish I had heard that tape, because I really couldn't actually answer the question. My brother-in-law especially was very upset. And he said, you know, I'm happy when I eat my dinner. I'm very happy. And of course, I know what he had for dinner. So then I understood what Prabhupada was saying. Prabhupada said, because we are just thinking of the body. We're thinking how to satisfy the body sexually or by eating meat and intoxication. And so these three things are so important to the materialists. And unless they can convince them that they are not this body, you cannot preach to them and say that there is no happiness. Because that's where they're seeking their happiness.
Chayo, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.